Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at the world of wildlife during this fall season with our two guests, Jamie Knack. Jamie's a UW Extension Wildlife Outreach Specialist in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. Jamie, welcome back.
Hey, it's always great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and you brought along David Drake.
Yeah, David came along again today.
Well, that's good. David's a professor of forest and wildlife ecology at UW, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist. David, good to have you back.
Well, thank you, Larry. I'm like, I'm on a shoe. Hard to get rid of.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. We'll talk about phenology today if you want to. We can talk about the latest breeding bird survey. We got there's a new bat we found in Wisconsin and, of course, a whole lot more. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You know, fall's kind of my favorite time because there's so much, I mean, it's so beautiful. The weather is great and all the seasons, hunting seasons and so forth, get into full swing.
Yeah, it is beautiful out there. Oh, there's just something about that crispness in the air, and the maples now are starting to turn down here in the southern part of the state, and the sumacs are turning, and it is.
As you said, I mean, there's so much to do and so much to see in terms of wildlife, but for me, it's definitely a favorite time of the year, and I always feel cheated. It seems to go by so fast, and there's so much to do outside. You just never get enough in.
Yeah, there's lots we can talk about today. I know the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas surveys, we've got some results from that.
So the Breeding Bird Survey is really a citizen science-driven survey that allows us to track the changes in bird populations and then also identify birds in conservation need or of greatest conservation need. So the last full Atlas effort, so the first Atlas, was done in 1995 to 2000, so it was a five-year effort, again, to document breeding bird activity, so not just sightings, but actual breeding activity of these birds in the state. And that effort, obviously, is concluded. We have data from that, and now we are in year two of five for the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas 2. So after 2 years of this Atlas effort, we've documented, volunteers have documented 220 birds breeding in the state.
And
Species, sorry. 220 species, yes, that's very important. And when we compare that with the five-year effort done from 1995 to 2000, at the conclusion of that five-year period, there were 226 confirmed with 11 possible. Right now we are at 220 confirmed with another 19 possible. So
a few more birds.
One of those birds, just incredibly interesting, rare, first ever recorded nesting in the state is a Mississippi kite, which is a species of falcon, or not falcon,
suddenly blanking.
Yeah. It's a raptor.
It's a type of raptor.
Yeah, it's a raptor. And they're known for their aerial acrobatics, and they're really good at catching insects like cicadas and dragonflies. And anyway, there was a recorded breeding activity of a pair of kites in Rock County.
So yeah, that's
near
really
Janesville.
Cool.
Yeah, so.
It is. That is, and they are well north of their range up here.
Yeah.
Yep, very distinct birds. They've got a forked tail and you know, look like a raptor a little bit, but a unique-looking raptor. So that is a pretty neat sighting.
Yeah.
Well, we have callers online. Let's take some calls if we can. Kay in Prairie du Sac, your turn. Hi, Kay. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. A red squirrel has just shown up in my neighborhood in town, and so it's only about a third the size of a gray squirrel. And it doesn't seem to hop like gray squirrels. It scurries real fast like a chipmunk. And I see it very often. And I just wanted some information about it. Can you tell me, are they common in town and kind of what their habits are? And if there is truly just this one, can it winter alone or will it leave to look for others?
Yeah. David, you want to take that?
Yeah, I'll take that. And Jamie, you chime in, please.
Sure.
Yeah, so, Kay, we've got 7 squirrel species in the state of Wisconsin here, and red squirrels are a very common species, one of the 7. Typically, they're found more commonly up in the northern part of the state, so it's a little unusual to have them down here, but not terribly unusual. And even though, as you appropriately said, they're about a third of the size of an adult gray squirrel, they are a pretty feisty squirrel for their size. And a lot of times you'll hear them just kind of chattering at you and kind of scolding you if you get a little bit too close to them. They're active year-round, so they don't hibernate. A couple of our squirrel species, or the ground squirrels, like the 13-line ground squirrel, they do hibernate in the winter. But the tree squirrels are active year-round, and you'll see this animal around a lot of times. You know, it's not unusual for them to be around human beings and cities and things like that, because there's a lot of food source there, especially bird feeders, and you'll likely see it on your bird feeder as well. But and they seem to get along okay with gray squirrels and fox squirrels and other squirrel species. They're some of the tree squirrel species. But that's a neat little animal. They certainly can cause some damage. You know, they, just like any other squirrel, they're a rodent, and so they do chew on wooden structures like your house and other things like that.
Wires.
And, but yeah, they're a neat species. I don't know, Jamie, do you, if you want to add anything?
They're just kind of fun. They, for the size, they're one of the smallest squirrels. They're just feisty. And so watching their antics and if you've ever spent time in a deer blind or things like that, if you get them in close, they're really fun to watch. So,
thanks a lot for calling, Kay. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jackie in Drummond next. Hi, Jackie. Thank you for calling. Jackie, are you there? Oh, I think
she's got her radio on.
She had her radio on. Oh, my goodness me. Let me give you the number to call if you'd like to join in, but turn your radio down when you do it. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Jackie and Drummond, thank you for calling.
Yes. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, this is just a plug for the Cable History, Natural History Museum in Cable, Wisconsin. If you're not familiar with Cable, you're all familiar with the Berkey area, so that's where it is. And their exhibit is right what you're talking about. They have a phrenology exhibit with dioramas representing the 4 seasons. And we have a wonderful taxidermy collection that we got from our benefactor years ago. So there's all the animals there. And so it's a really interesting experience to come for the phrenology. And then they have activities for the kids to write down what they've seen. And then I was just remembering, we also have a raptor program. They have a kestrel, an owl, and a red-tailed hawk. Huh. So we have all the phrenology you want under one roof. And I just love to promote this small museum in the middle of nowhere.
So, Jackie, I think I'm also familiar. There's a mammal trail that's a trail that can be walked, snowshoed, skied, that has cutouts of various Wisconsin mammals with ecological information about them as well. So, yeah, it's an incredible museum. They're doing a lot of good work there. So if you are in the area, or make a point of going to Cable, especially at this time of the year with the wonderful fall colors. So.
We often think about phenology this time of the year, don't we?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. We think about it a lot of times in the spring as birds start migrating back up and things start waking up out of hibernation. But certainly the phenology of when leaves change and animals start moving south or going into hibernation is also important. And certainly Elder Leopold is probably one of the most famous phenologists here and really got people tuned into that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We'll talk some more about that as well as we visit with Jamie Nack, UW Extension Wildlife Outreach Specialist in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. That's where David Drake finds home, too, there. He's a professor in that department and also a UW Extension Wildlife Specialist. One of the big wildlife specialists here at Wisconsin Public Radio is Jill Nadeau.
And you got me pegged, Larry. You totally
she
got
will
me pegged.
If she finds a raccoon, she takes it right off to get it repaired. If it's injured, she's had a wood duck go down her chimney one time, and she got it out of the chimney and got it taken care of. And she also is pretty good at helping me out with my little drive here. I've got a fall membership drive. Well, actually, all of Wisconsin Public Radio has a fall membership drive. And we're here today to raise the money that pays for the programs that you enjoy, programs like this one. I hope you'll give your support to WPR at wpr.org or by calling 888 202 2552. Jill, we've got, we did pretty well last hour.
We did. We had 41 people pledge, which was awesome. And this hour, we need to get 40. But, you know, I'd kind of like to beat the last hour. What
do
you think?
42.
I think so. So if you want to help us meet our goal, why not make a contribution now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. The programs that you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio, thanks to your support.
You enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. In part, we're commercial-free, and that means we depend on other sources of funding. Of course, we have state and federal funding. We have corporate funding. That's very important as well. But there's another source that's also very important.
That's right. The single largest piece of the budget pie, and I know I love pie, comes from you. Your support makes all the difference. It's like the backbone of our organization, our funding. Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Since we launched our Sustainer program, thousands of members have made the switch to providing a steady, reliable stream of support to WPR. They do it by making automatic monthly gifts that gives some security, and it comes with some benefits, too.
And you don't have to remember to renew your membership each year because it automatically rolls over. And I know I did that, and I'm so happy because I don't have to remember when to do it. So become a sustainer, you try saying that, today at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 with a gift of maybe $10 a month or whatever amount that you choose.
A lot of thought goes into what we select as thank you gifts during our membership drives. We ask people for their ideas, check out what other public radio stations are offering, do lots of internet research. And it's all worth it because we want you to have the best WPR logo items possible. We love the new WPR pint glasses and think you will too. Here are some of our WPR staff members to tell you why.
It's just a really neat looking pint glass. It's sturdy, it's glass, easy to clean.
I like that it's got both WPR and NPR's logos on them.
I will actually strategically make sure to only serve guests in this WPR pint glass when they come over.
Donate $7 a month or more and ask for your pair of WPR pint glasses. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know what? I might decide to serve a little beer in those pint glasses when people
shock,
come
Larry.
Over.
That's a shock.
It might be a shock to your system, but that's the way it is around here. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Make that pledge during this fall membership drive. Larry Mueller with Jill Nadeau asking for your support of WPR. And you know what? Maybe your gift is $10 or $15 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
Absolutely. And if you've got a few minutes right now, why don't you make that call? Support Wisconsin Public Radio. All we need is your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
And your gift supports the stories and the programs that keep you connected to the world. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, on this program, we cover topics like the environment and consumer issues. In fact, the consumer people are going to be on tomorrow. Gardening, Wisconsin authors, food. You get a lot of information from this program. And it's possible because your financial support of Wisconsin Public Radio. So support this program and all the other programs that you enjoy on WPR with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking for 39 more pledges in the next 40 minutes or so here. Give to WPR to support the station you love. It's your public radio station.
And thank you to those who have already given. We so much appreciate your support. If you haven't, please help us pay for the programs you enjoy. Give a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And of course, a big thanks if you've already renewed or you're making ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer. Listeners who renew and the monthly sustainers are really the backbone of WPR.
Right. And if you haven't given yet, join thousands of other wonderful, and I know they're wonderful, WPR members by donating. That was WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, I tell you what, we've got more pledges to grow. If you're a sustainer, you can become one right now. It's easy to, if you're not one, you can do it right now. It's easy to set up convenient ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. I'd use the credit card.
Absolutely.
Then I get the air miles.
That's right, because you're always traveling, Larry.
I'm always, yeah, I like those air miles. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And we have some nice comments from folks who have contributed already. Addison from Beloit says, thanks so much for having a reliable, entertaining, and informative station. I'm only 17.
Oh, yay.
And he contributed. Thanks. I know what a valuable resource Wisconsin Public Radio, NPR, is, and I'm happy to invest. Thanks for making my life a little bit better.
That's wonderful.
What do you think of that?
Get him early. Absolutely. That's a smart guy. He's going to go with places, Larry. Remember, you can help us too. Your gift is powerful. It really does make a difference. At WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you haven't done it already, now is really the time. Your gift is very powerful. It really makes a difference. So I hope you'll, if you haven't done it yet, please do it now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Taking a look at the world of wildlife today with our two guests, Jamie Nack, UW Extension Wildlife Outreach Specialist, and David Drake, Professor of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison and with UW Extension as well. Join in at 800-642-1234. It's emails coming in, too. You can email us at talk@WPR.org. Or if you got a nice wildlife photo, we always love to see those up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Let's go to Mary in Madison next with a comment or question. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hello. I'm glad to get on so soon. Yes, I have a question about native bumblebees in Wisconsin. They emerge as the female emerges as a near queen. I don't have the Latin term for it, but she's not a full queen. She's a near queen. And I assume she has eggs in her, was born with eggs. And could you use the term self-fertilization as well as alternative generations?
Alternative, yeah. Okay, go ahead, David.
Yeah, you know, Mary, I think between Larry and Jamie and I, we know just about everything except the answer to that question. And I know Larry has Phil Pelteri on as a guest to talk about insect issues, and maybe call back when you hear Phil, unless, Jamie, do you know the answer to this question?
I do not know.
Oh.
Yeah, so
I would need to phone a friend.
Yeah, sorry, Mary. We hate to disappoint you, but we just don't know the answer to that question.
We'll have to, maybe some listeners know and they'll call
in with
a comment.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. So stay listening, Mary. Maybe we'll get somebody else calling in with the correct answer. You know, there's always a lot of DNR types listening.
Yeah, there's a lot of people and just people
listening.
In general who know stuff.
Carla in Madison, we turn to you. Hi, Carla.
Hi. My husband and I have seen an animal in our yard. It has short legs, about a 12 to 15-inch body, and a tail that's close to the same length. And it has a smooth brown coat. I think it's a weasel from what I Googled and found. My husband thought it looked more like a mink. I'm wondering if you have an idea what it might be. We live on the lake, so that might make a difference as to what it might be.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Carla, thanks for the call. And it's your lucky day because you're both right.
Yeah.
I know they're part of the same family, but they're not the same animal, are they?
Well, there are a number of members of the weasel family, the mustelid family, in Wisconsin. So anywhere from striped skunks, badgers, otters, three weasels. So there's a least weasel, short-tailed weasel, and a long-tailed weasel. And the mink is also a member of the weasel family. So I think you are correct in terms of your description of the overall length, the location of where you live. Mink are typically chocolate brown. If you had a chance to see the throat patch or the underside just up around the throat, it's usually white in color.
If it's a mink.
If it's a mink, yep. Yep. And so I do think, just judging by the size that you're estimating and the location being near water, they are one of the four aquatic fur bearers that that you are indeed looking at a mink. And again, it's a member of the weasel family. So
Kind of both right.
Yeah, so you're kind of both right.
But watch for that white patch. You'll probably likely see it again.
Yeah, and they eat a lot of, you know, they'll eat fish and other amphibians and so along that shoreline. So often see them around riprap. If there's rocky areas, we see them around the Memorial Union and Lake Mendota. You know, they've been seen quite frequently, too. Oh, so
they're not unusual around.
Nope. They're pretty common throughout the state.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Let's go to Mike in Fort Atkinson next. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. This is Mike from Fort Atkinson. And just an observation that's probably for you more than your guests. We fish muskies up in the northern part of the state of Wisconsin, and we've been noticing on the larger fish concentrations of leeches toward the backs of the fish this year. We've been doing this for decades, and yeah, you see the occasional leech on the fish, but these are just they're carrying an awful lot of leeches this year, and I was just wondering if there's anything in particular that might be causing this.
I have no idea. I haven't had any fish, any great large muskies, let's put it that way, on my line here this last year. So I don't know.
I've not heard of anything either, but Mike, my suggestion to you would be to contact the local fisheries biologist for the Department of Natural Resources in your area and either email them or share that information with them. And hopefully they can, one, satisfy your inquiry, but also if there is something going on, they'll be the ones that will want to know about it.
Yeah, what area of the state are you fishing?
We're just outside of Park Falls, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, Park Falls office.
Yeah, the Park Falls office would be the best one, but even if you called the local office.
Yep.
Oh, one more thing while I got you on the phone, Larry.
Yeah.
We've just started using the Bulger Grip clamp on the fish this year, and they're a lot livelier when we release them, but I was wondering if there's any damage to the fish that's caused by that you know of.
Not that I know of. I haven't seen any reports on their being damaged. They do better. Or they seem to do better.
I think so too. But, I was just wondering if you'd heard anything.
No, haven't heard anything.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling, Mike. Appreciate it. And more callers on. Tom from Wanakee email. Let's take an email. And said, since early August, I've observed the squirrels in my yard very busy gathering food for winter. In late August, I mowed my lawn and counted 12 different piles of hickory nut shells. Never had that many at one time. Are they already gathering for an early winter, David?
Well, hopefully not. You know, squirrels, like we were talking with Kay earlier about the red squirrel she had in her yard, the tree squirrels are active year-round, and so they're starting to put on a healthy coat of fat right now to try to get ready for winter. And nuts obviously have a very high source of protein, so it's a good food source for them to start packing on calories. And I think it's just this is a normal time of the year for them to start doing that, and they've got to prepare over a long enough period of time that they can put that weight on over a period of time. And so that's just what they're doing right now. And Jamie and I were just sharing over the break, there was kind of an interesting study that came out a number of years ago where these researchers pulled squirrels off of an area that they could exclude the squirrels out of an area that was fenced on top and down the sides. And they pulled all the squirrels off of there.
Mm-hmm.
Buried nuts, and then they marked the location of all the nuts buried across this property, and then opened the property back up, and the squirrels found 85% of the nuts that they had out there. And so they concluded that the squirrels were using a lot of times their sense of smell to smell those nuts. And so that's
interesting research.
Yeah, it was pretty
cool.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. And so now it's common where you'll see squirrels start digging in flower beds for bulbs and flower pots, yep, burying nuts as well. And so what you're seeing, Tom, is very, very common.
Janie in La Crosse, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the little, what we call sweat bees. They're the little bees that are around areas where there's maybe a garbage can or whatever to get their food for the winter. We called them sweat bees. They're not a honeybee. They're not a bumblebee. I was told that they are not aggressive because they do not have a queen. So I'd like to know a little bit more about these guys.
You know what? I think you stumped us again.
Maybe this is why people aren't calling in with pledges, because we're not giving them a value for their money right now.
Oh, well, I Jamie,
yeah, I really don't know. I do know exactly what she's talking, I mean, the species she's talking about, but I'm not familiar with their ecology as far as whether they have a queen or not. Maybe we'll get a beekeeper, or, you know, somebody that will call in that has the knowledge of some of these questions that have been asked about bees particularly.
Yeah, but if you're thinking about calling with a bee question or an insect question, you're probably better off not to call.
Yeah.
we're probably not going to have an answer.
It's a little bit out of our sweet spot.
So thanks again for calling. Nick and Brillian, we turn to you. Hi, Nick. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. I was just a little bit concerned. I've been out looking for hen of the woods, and I found a lot of them.
Good.
However, most of them have been covered in this horrible mildew. Is that because it's so wet out?
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
I would suspect the wet and the cool temperatures. Yep. That's just probably had a lot to do with it.
Good conditions for the growth of mildew.
Good conditions for the growth of the mushrooms, mm-hmm. too.
Absolutely.
Mushroom hunting has been great this winter. I'm sure it's the
Yeah, it's got to be.
Oh, okay. I was just concerned because I wasn't sure what was going on. I did find some ones that just started that were not attacked yet. So
yeah. Those are probably the ones to take.
Yeah, I would suggest with the rain, you're going to need to check and pick regularly before they have a chance to form the mildew.
There we go. Thanks for calling, Nick. Susanna and Eloise, your turn. Thank you for calling.
It's Eloise.
Eloise, sorry.
Yes. I want to say hello to everybody. Over the last 3 years, the squirrel population has absolutely exploded in my backyard. And I've asked people what I can do to get rid of them. And everything they're giving me as far as ideas don't sound very humane. So I'm just wondering if there's any suggestions you might have to kind of curb this population. They're breaking all of my bird feeders. I've gone through 10 bird feeders this summer just watching them when they're not there. And I come home and they, you know, there's a broken bird feeder. They hop on it. And everything that's supposed to be squirrel-proof isn't.
Well, you're going to have trouble getting rid of the squirrels, humanely or otherwise.
Yeah, you sure are, Suzanne. A humane way to get rid of squirrels in your property would most likely be to live trap them with peanut butter and maybe peanut butter mixed with sunflower seed or something like that. The issue once you live trap them is what do you do with them?
Yeah.
And if you relocate or release the squirrel on property that you don't own, be it public or private, you need permission from the owner or manager of that property, which sometimes is hard to get. Squirrels can be territorial, and so there's some question about the humaneness of releasing an animal that is somewhat territorial or territorial in nature into another animal's territory. And because squirrels are such a ubiquitous or a common species, that most likely by the time you get home from releasing that one squirrel, two others have filled the gap, moved back in. So generally what we recommend is instead of trying to get rid of squirrels from your yard is perhaps as you replace your squirrel feeders, and I'm sorry you have to do that, but that's a common problem, is get squirrel feeders that are sturdily built out of relatively squirrel-proof material like metal instead of wood or plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps take your feeders down, especially this time of the year. The birds don't necessarily need the food because there's still substantial amounts of natural food available. So take your bird feeders down for a couple weeks and just let the squirrels disperse and find other sources of food and then put them back up. You can try harassing the squirrels out of the area and things
that
like that.
That's going to work.
It can be a losing battle. It really can be.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, you know what? We are in our fall membership drive, and so Jill Nadeau, Jill, you're back.
Hi, I'm back again. It's like a bad penny.
I'm glad that, speaking of pennies, we need to talk about pennies and dollars right now.
We sure do.
Your support, as you listen, is the foundation of our budget. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your go-to place for great programs. And we'll get back to Jamie Nack and David Drake in just a minute. But here to tell you, now's the time to contribute at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Make your gift of support in the programs of the programs you count on.
And we're looking for 31 more pledges and about, what, 33 more? Oh, they told me I didn't have to do math, but
23 more.
Thanks. So I'm not a math major. Anyway, but we can do that, Larry. I know we can. Mm-hmm. And remember, your support really helps keep this station strong. So help pay for the Larry Mueller Show. You like us, help us pay for it with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, the first Wednesday of the month is a very popular time because Jamie Nack and David Drake come by every other month, and Scott Craven's on the other first Wednesday of the month. And these wildlife shows are really a lot of fun and enjoyable, and I think it's an example of the interesting and informative conversations we have on the show.
Absolutely, and we certainly have a lot of them, and it helps because our audience members contribute. And so if you could contribute a little bit financially, we would really appreciate that too. So take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you. Then make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you ask a WPR member why they give, they'll probably tell you it feels better to listen to WPR when you do give. And it feels good to know you're part of making something special happen.
So make your first ever gift of maybe $5 or $10 a month and enjoy the excitement of supporting your public radio station. It starts with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And what does public radio mean? Public radio means listener-supported radio.
That's right. And while we do appreciate business contributions and federal and state tax dollars, listener support is the single largest source of WPR's budget. Your contribution of any amount, it really, really matters at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now let's admit it. Sometimes we spend money on silly things.
I blew my $8 on this cable. I've got another cable just sitting around the house doing nothing.
Postage to send a care package to my son in Texas that was outrageously expensive.
It might have been dryer sheets on Amazon.
It's pretty easy to make a questionable decision about how we spend our money, and it can be just as easy, and not a bad idea, to make a few sound investments along the way, like supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is the single largest source of funding at WPR. So make a sound investment with your gift to WPR right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now's the time to make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller with Jill Nadeau asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. And maybe your gift is $5 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month. We have actually several people who have done that over time. We really appreciate and we count on your gift.
Absolutely. And you know, we get such good guests on WPR because they know that you will ask great questions. And not just Larry, but you. And they won't be interrupted by commercials either. So your support makes all of this possible. You are the most reliable part of our budget. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
30 more pledges in the next 19 minutes or so. Your gift right now, very important. Support the programs you rely on every day.
And thank you so much for everyone who's already given. And if you haven't, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, I have friends that say, I already gave. I already gave when I see them. And you know what? After you've made your donation to WPR, another way you can help is by telling your friends and family that you've done it.
Absolutely. It's something to be proud of. You can use social media. Call them up. Mention it when you see them. Just let them know that you support WPR. That'll help plant the idea in their head. So make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and let your friends know how you feel about WPR and the support that you're giving.
You know, on the social media, you can use social media for this. You can call them up. You can mention it when you see them. You know, just It's really, really important. And a $10 a month contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, that's just what, 30 cents a day, roughly?
Yep, about 30 cents a day.
You probably spend a lot more than 30 cents a day on things you shouldn't. Or maybe on things you value less than Wisconsin Public Radio.
Very, very true, Larry. We have got, we still only have 10 pledges, so we need 30 more, and by the top of the hour, by noon. So please help us out. Give us a call at 888-202-2552, or you can do it online, WPR.org.
Your pledge right now is so important, really. I'm serious about this. At WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, make your contribution right now, and thank you so much. Thanks so much for being with us here on the Ideas Network, talking today with two great guests, Jamie Nack and David Drake from the UW Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology, and also with UW Extension. So it's great to have them along. And certainly, if you have a question, a wildlife question, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We're not going to take, well, let's take one more question about mushrooms and then let it go.
All right.
All right. There we go. What's on your mind, Lynn? From Barnum, Minnesota, by the way.
Yes, I am. I'm just wondering, where could I find them? My son-in-law found them on a tree close to a lake, and my boyfriend found them down south of the cities close to a lake. Is that where they normally grow, and what side of the tree do they usually grow on?
Lynn, if we gave you all the answers, we would make it too easy for you to find these. Typically with a hen of the woods, they're associated with trees and primarily oaks. And I guess it's not terribly uncommon for some mushrooms to be associated with trees. Like the morels are associated with elms a lot. Mm-hmm. And what side of the tree, that's a good question. But when you start seeing oak trees, I would start going and looking around the base of those oak trees and see what you can find.
Yeah, I think... walk around the tree, take a look, and you know, sometimes you're going to find them on all sides of the tree.
Yeah, and I would guess there's local clubs and other resources that you can tap into, local knowledge.
Yep, absolutely. And then I guess a disclaimer, just make sure you're careful with mushrooms because there are some false mushrooms out there that might look like something that's safe to eat and it might not be safe to eat. So just if you're new to mushroom collecting, definitely make sure you know what you're doing, or as Jamie said, go with an experienced collector for the first few times to make sure you really do know what you're picking.
Yeah, I have terrible memories of reading about the family that came to live in the U.S. from France and went out to collect mushrooms like they did in France, and they found a mushroom that looked like it was the right one, and all four, the daughter and son and mom and dad, all perished.
Oh, yeah.
So it's nothing to fool around with.
No.
Correct.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Lynn. Appreciate it. Donna in Milwaukee. Donna, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering, do you know anything about Kishigan Lake, about them draining it later this fall to get the weeds out? Did you hear anything about that?
Yeah, Donna, I don't know that specific management situation. Again, local biologists would be able to give some insight to that, and I'm sure they'd welcome your call and being able to give you the information on why they're taking that management strategy.
It's a common strategy.
Yeah, it's really common to as a management technique to lower water levels. Sometimes it's to make food available for shorebirds as they're migrating. Sometimes it can be to kind of make cattail beds more stable or anchored into the ground. Sometimes it's to deal with invasive or rough fish to be able to get them out. So there's a lot of reasons why lakes are drained or water levels are lowered. But again, for that specific lake, as to why it's being done, I think if you contact the local Department of Natural Resources office, they'll have that answer for you.
And, and typically that water is regenerated.
Yeah, it's a temporary thing.
Yep, temporary thing. Thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. We had on Facebook a message from Mary. She said, for folks with squirrels on their feeders, I use a squirrel baffle, which has some effect, but then I grease the poles with Vaseline, and that has done the trick. It's fun to watch them try to climb the pole, but Is there some issue with Vaseline on the pole?
Yeah, there is, there can be. So it's Vaseline or any other type of lubricant or petroleum-based jelly you might put on a pole for squirrels, or this applies to birds as well, is it can mat their fur or their feathers. And especially when we get into colder temperatures, that fur is so vital to these animals, or the feathers are so vital to the animals, to keep them warm. And it can actually cause them great harm or even death if they go into a hypothermic state because they can't keep themselves warm. And so if that Vaseline is matting their fur as they're trying to climb the pole, it can be very detrimental to squirrels or whatever other animals coming in contact with that Vaseline. And so typically if you use baffles, that should be good enough as long as the squirrel can't jump to the feeder from an elevated perch like a tree limb or your house roof. And most squirrels might jump, you know, with the exception of the flying squirrels that can soar quite distances, great distances. You know, a gray squirrel might jump 8 feet or something like that. So you don't have to move it all that far from elevated perches. But as long as you can get it away from elevated perches, typically baffles are a good enough approach that you wouldn't have to grease that pole with Vaseline.
Yeah, and the other option you can do too, which is, you know, why they were choosing the Vaseline, would be to just wrap underneath the baffle with stovepipe or metal, you know, to just make it slippery in general. They can't get their nails into the wood that the feeder is being propped on. So,
that's a good idea.
Do something like wrap it in metal sheeting as well. But yeah, typically they can't figure out how to get around the baffle. If they're doing that, then they are more likely, if they're still getting to the feeder and you have a baffle, they're more likely still finding a jumping off point. So you need to trim back some more branches a little bit further. It's amazing how far away they can still get access.
What about, we've got some more callers online, but what about the birds that are migrating through the state right now? Of course, there's lots of them.
Yep, there sure are. They've been migrating probably since late part of August or so, and they'll go on through the better part of November. I know both of us have had calls before that we've had a hummingbird at a feeder in southern Wisconsin, you know, well into December, and other oddities like that.
Yeah, so hummingbirds, I mean, just, you know, being around the house and kind of watching phenology happen, blackbirds has certainly started to group up, getting ready to migrate in big, large flocks or swarms, it feels like.
Yep.
Canada geese have certainly started. If you've been, you know, commuting to work or early mornings, evenings, you're certainly seeing more flocks of Canada geese. Now is the best time to start planning a trip to Horicon, Crex, Teresa, you know, some of the large marshes. Horicon will have 200,000 geese at peak, and that's
impressive.
From the middle of October to mid-November as the prime times to go. And it's just, if you haven't done it, it's a sight to be seen. And that'll correspond to darn near peak color for
that part of the state.
Yeah, for that part of the state. So, and cranes, that's another one, being up in Columbia County, certainly lots and lots of cranes, and they're starting to stage. They'll congregate for a while here, and then by the end of November, mid to end of November, they'll start migrating. Yep. So lots going on. Hummingbirds, I haven't seen a hummingbird. I don't know about you, Larry, but it's been about a week and a half since.
Yeah, been a while.
So I still have the feeder up there just in case, but yeah, they've pretty much migrated.
Yep.
At Horicon, I love to go like that last hour before sunset.
Just the sounds.
Sound. I just get out of the car and get out there a bit.
And Horicon has the new education center, so the Explorium, and that is really worth seeing. Take some time and really enjoy the interactive exhibits and the history that Horicon has.
Let's go to Mary in Almond. Thank you for calling, Mary.
Oh, thank you, Larry, and thank you, guests. I always enjoy listening to you guys. I have a suggestion that we used on the Bluebird Trail to keep the raccoons off of the houses. And it's using a slinky. It's actually only half of the slinky. We put it around the pole and attach it underneath the house, and we actually had some attacks this summer, and all the eggs and all the babies were fine. And there was a person that told me about it, that he used it on his feeders to keep the squirrels off. He has a pole that he has the feeder on, and they put this slinky underneath, and somehow the animals can't figure out how to attach themselves to the pole. You know, the slinky keeps going up and down.
Oh, that's very cool.
So the key to that is at the top of the slinky, you have to adhere that top piece of the slinky to either the pole or the birdhouse or bird nest, because otherwise the slinky will just slide down the pole to the ground and it's not effective.
Yeah. Right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Jamie Nack and David Drake from the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology and UW Extension. Great to have them along. And, you know, the person who sets all those programs up for us here from 11 to 12:30 is Jill Nadeau. She's back with me. And our goal is to keep bringing you topics like our wonderful World of Wildlife shows that we do on Wednesdays typically, and certainly the first Wednesday of every month we do it. Your support makes that happen. So I hope you'll give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Jill, how are we doing here?
Well, Larry, we're looking for 23 more pledges in just 6 minutes, but I think we can still do that. So make your gift of support for the programs that you enjoy and you rely on every day. Your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes a difference.
You know, you might not have a life coach or a wildlife expert from like we've got today on your speed dial, but tell you what, that's okay. When you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, you get great advice from all kinds of experts.
And what's the cost to you? You choose. The Ideas Network is your affordable source for helpful information. It's a great deal, so give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you should maybe consider sharing your appreciation of the lifelong learning you get from WPR with a 9XM Leadership Circle gift of $100 a month. That's $1,200 a year. Provides an important piece of funding for the programs we rely on, for sure.
That's right. So make that leadership gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This fall membership drive, ask for a set of WPR pint glasses when you give $7 a month. They've got a neat design featuring both the WPR and NPR logos. You'll get two 16-ounce glasses that will hold any kind of drink, milk, water, beer, even your favorite juice, and they're made of durable glass. Check them out at WPR.org. With these glasses, you can sip any of your favorite beverages in style while you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. Donate $7 a month right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So I hope you'll make your pledge of support right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau, asking for your support of WPR during our drive. And maybe your gift is $10 a month or maybe it's $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
Your bills online. And I bet you don't miss all that extra paper and the envelopes floating around the house.
You can support WPR in the same streamlined way by becoming a sustainer. You choose a monthly amount that works for you. Maybe it's 10 or 20 bucks. And you set it up to come out of your credit card or your bank account. It rolls over every year. So your support of WPR is always current. Easy to do at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And, you know, we've had a kind of a nice, cool Facebook comment. And I forgot seeing who said it. Daniel.
Yeah.
Says, WPR is my alarm clock and the soundtrack to my daily routine. We have the most beautiful state and the most informative radio station in the world.
I thank you for making...
Thank you for making me Thank you for making me a better, wiser, kinder citizen.
That's wonderful
very nice
to hear, isn't
thing.
It, Larry? Yeah.
And I think this show, you know, there aren't a lot of shows like this out here right now. Doing the kinds of things that we do. And, you know, a pledge right now is really a vote for the wildlife shows and all the other shows you hear from 11 to 12:30. It's really, really important for you to pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you know, when I get calls from people during the shows, during the week, I get that same information from them, how much they appreciate what they learn from the shows they listen to on WPR. So now it's your chance to help pay for the programs that you depend on. So we're looking for 22 more pledges just in the next minute and a half, and I know that you can do that. Please make your donation now. Support the programs that you enjoy at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
If you've been listening to WPR for a while without pledging, maybe you haven't given them because you don't know that we're listener supported. Well, we certainly are.
Yes,
and we've been telling you
over and over again.
Over and over again here. It's all seriousness. And it really is the single largest piece of our budget. It comes from people just like you. So give now if you haven't done it.
Absolutely. And well, you know what? You're still listening here all these months or years later after you first turned us on. So how about a donation? Your gift of $5 or $10 a month or whatever you choose makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And, you know, time flies. Maybe it's been longer than you realize since you last gave to WPR, and we're asking you to keep your membership active.
Absolutely. And think of your support of WPR, you know, just like you think of other services that you rely on and pay for, your internet, your phone, cable, all of that stuff. Well, do that with WPR. Renew your support right now with an ongoing monthly gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We're stuck on 22 pledges right now. Let's get you going here. Your gift right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Your gift is very powerful, really makes a big difference. We'll be back with our guests right after the news. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at the world of wildlife today. I'm Larry Mueller with my two guests, Jamie Nack and David Drake from the UW-Madison Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology and UW Extension as well. So great to have them along. We have open lines, get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. John from Green Bay was online, couldn't stay online, but wonders if you have an update on the woodcock numbers this year. He's noticing quite a number more of them in northern Wisconsin.
Yeah, thanks, John. So woodcock populations have been pretty stable as far as I can recall. But some of the reasons why you're potentially seeing more right now at this time is that woodcock are starting their migration. So especially in northern Wisconsin, you might be seeing some additional numbers than you've seen over the last month or two. And the rain has certainly been helpful for woodcock populations or just woodcock presence in an area. They feed on invertebrates, so they use their bill to probe and eat invertebrates in the soil. So they're always looking for wet, moist areas along tag alders, along streams, young aspen stands, and so on. So they're really a young forest-dependent species. And so that is also part of it. So if you happen to be in that type of habitat, young forest habitat, you're likely to see more of them. So if that's been a change for you in the past month or two, also, again, the moisture content that we've had this late summer going into the fall has been helpful. And I think we're at the beginning of the migration, especially in northern Wisconsin. So if you want to track migration, the Ruffed Grouse Society at a national level on their website tracks migration of woodcock by looking at reports from the public. So it's kind of a neat thing to take a look at. So if you're interested, just go to the Ruffed Grouse Society's webpage and look at their migration tracker for woodcock.
You know, I was at my daughter's cross-country meet. She was running. It did pretty good, actually, a couple nights ago. And somebody said, is the youth deer hunt coming up this weekend? And I said, I think it is.
It is.
And it is.
It's amazing how fast things are coming up.
So, yeah.
Again, that wonderful fall. But, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday is the youth deer hunt. And again, that is for youth who are between the ages of 10 and 15. Gives them an opportunity to hunt deer and get some valuable hunting experience at a time when other hunters are not authorized to hunt deer with a firearm. So hunters age 10 to 15 years of age with or without a hunter education certificate are eligible to participate. Of course, they need a license and appropriate antlerless tags, depending on what they want to pursue. And then there are different rules as far as whether they need to be with a mentor or not. So to get up on that, I would encourage you to go to the Department of Natural Resources website, read about the youth hunt. There are also mentored hunting opportunities. So you need to
learn to hunt.
Learn to hunt, and then just mentored hunting, the mentored hunting law in general. So it's important to kind of read about those regulations.
Judith Sears-Poisson did a learn to hunt with pheasants. Really had a wonderful time.
Yeah, and I believe she did that at through the McKenzie Center, which would be the Friends of the Poinette Game Farm. And if that's something folks are interested in, again, the Department of Natural Resources website, type in the words learn to hunt, and they will post all of their upcoming events, and you can sign up for them. But there are a number of pheasant learn to hunts coming up. I think I saw a raccoon one, a squirrel one. Most of the waterfowl ones have since passed. But pheasant would be the big one coming up. And so certainly do check that out. That's a great opportunity to get some experience.
Yeah, and still nice out. Unlike the 9-day gun deer season when it could be, you know,
Pretty cold.
This is a nice time to get the youth out.
Kathy sent an email asking why they are so inundated with mice up in Hayward this time of the year. Well, this time of the year, probably inundated everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, David? So depending on the mouse species, Kathy, mice just like us are starting to think about the winter, and one of the things they're thinking about is trying to find some nice warm shelter for the winter, and a lot of times that's people's houses and cabins and things of that nature. So you may be more prone to seeing them right now just because they're pushing around the houses a little bit more, probing for places possible to get into your basement or your house. That with some warmer places than it will be in a couple months. And but mice are also one of those small mammal species, and the small mammals collectively kind of form the base of the pyramid for everything else that that feeds on them. And so those populations do fluctuate naturally based on what's available in the habitat in terms of food or shelter or how the reproduction was the previous year and things of that nature. So there's a variety of reasons, but most likely it's just that they're starting to look for a nice warm place for the winter.
I always get a kick out of Scott Craven talking about the yearly battles he has with mice in the house and keeping them away from Candy.
Yeah, yep. Right. His wife, his wife. Not Candy the... Maybe Candy
maybe
the sweet,
candy
too.
But
yeah,
maybe that's
right.
The problem.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, another point I wanted to bring up, and I did mention this once on the show, but there's a new bat species that was discovered in Wisconsin, and that's kind of good news, isn't it?
Yeah, it is great news. And as the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources put a press release out about this, and they led into the story saying, with all the recent bad news, especially relative to white nose syndrome and how devastating that fungus has been for so many bat populations across the, especially the eastern half of the United States, to find a new bat species here in Wisconsin is really a pretty remarkable thing. And I think the last time a new bat species was found was back in the 1950s. So it's the evening bat is the name of the common name of that bat. And the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has got just a phenomenal group of bat biologists who are unbelievably active and proactive looking for white nose syndrome in hibernaculums throughout the wintertime. They do a lot of citizen science with bat detectors, and one of the things they do is also trap bats and trap and tag bats. And they were trapping down in Avon Bottoms wildlife area in Rock County. And they caught a bat that didn't look quite like any of the other bats they've been catching. They thought initially it was a brown bat, but big brown bats are a good size larger than some of the evening bats. And the other thing that kind of clued them in, which is interesting in the press release, is they smelt a burnt orange smell. And certain bats do give off odors based on the chemistry of the body. So, for example, Mexican free-tailed bats, which we don't have here, they give off an odor like corn tortillas. And so they smelled this burnt orange smell, took a bunch of pictures and measurements of the bat, and it turned out to be a juvenile evening bat. And we only would have, so evening bats, the northern extent of the range is up about the Illinois-Wisconsin border. So Rock County is right on, you know, that it's one of the most southern counties in Wisconsin. So it's not unusual that they had an evening bat here, but they found it, started tracking it, and they track it back to a maternal roost. And so they found over 100 other evening bats. And so it does look like they are starting to push into Wisconsin, and there perhaps is a sustained population. And one of the things that's interesting about evening bats is only the females come up north. So they're a migratory bat. They'll start leaving. If they haven't already left, they'll start leaving our state, go hundreds of miles south down to Florida and thereabouts. The males stay in the southern part of the United States. The females come up to our area in the springtime and summer, give birth, and then have these maternal colony roosts of, you know, hundreds of bats sometimes, and then they'll migrate out of our area for the wintertime and come back in the spring. And so since they're a migratory bat, they are not susceptible to white nose syndrome.
Oh, that's really cool. Now, what kind of, when you talk about roosts, what would a roost be like? Would it be a cave? Would it be?
They're not really, they don't really nest in, or nest, roost in caves. They tend to be more loose bark of trees.
Yep, like a shag bark hickory.
Yeah, a shag bark hickory. So not in the leaves. Some bats roost in small clusters in leaves. That's not really what they were finding either. So just loose bark on a large tree.
And they are a tree-associated species, so you would find them around forested areas.
Right.
And they take insects, just like mosquitoes.
Yes, still an insect-eating bat. All of ours are.
Well, the last time I had someone on, PJ Leash, I think. Some people had called in and said, you know, we got a lot more mosquitoes this year, and we're not seeing the bats at night like we used to. And, of course, the rain would have something to do with the number of mosquitoes, but also bats can take a lot of mosquitoes
in the course of a night.
So it's really, really
And last, maybe the last thing on these evening bats is, so they have relatively strong jaws, and so they will certainly eat mosquitoes and other fun insects, but they really eat a lot of beetles and things like that have these hard, keratinous bodies, and those strong jaws allow them to kind of break through that keratin and
take them on the fly?
Yep, they take them on the fly, absolutely.
We had a listener email to ask if there's any, and this is totally switching topics here, but is there been any bear activity in southwest Wisconsin, the Driftless area? Jamie?
Yeah, I can't speak to necessarily, you know, what the current, you know, population might be down there, but certainly it's not uncommon to have bear sightings, especially in the southwest. I can't speak to, you know, current population estimates. But what I would say is that there is a new camera trapping effort, again, a citizen science opportunity called Snapshot Wisconsin. And eventually cameras will get deployed in more counties. Currently, there's about 6 counties that cameras are rolled out, where landowners are asked to put a camera out, or they voluntarily put a camera that's provided to them on the landscape. What we'll eventually be able to get from that camera study are answers to questions just like this. So some of these more just rarer accounts of animals. So, you know, where are bears? Where are bobcats? Fisher, you know, some of the different species, how are they distributing themselves, and potentially what is their abundance in these various areas? So, but it's certainly not uncommon to have bears in southern Wisconsin.
Those cameras have just been wonderful.
It's just
wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, the...
Wonderful, aren't they?
It's incredible.
What is it? Do you guys know much about those cameras? Or do you use your own cameras? Do you have...
We do have a camera at the new house that we've had up for the kids, you know, to get an idea of what's in their backyard and things like that. So we've got a lot of corn standing around our property. So I think once that corn comes down, things will move through the property a little bit more than they are right now. So
yeah, we've got cameras up. We also put them in our yard. We've had red fox in our yard and raccoons, and obviously all the dogs in the neighborhood. But I've got a camera project going on right now that we've got cameras deployed along the bike routes in Madison to see how the wildlife community might change as zoning changes, for example. And things like that. And so we had a caller call in about a mink question, and I've actually gotten mink on the camera a couple times in Madison.
Yeah,
already,
we use them in our classes. Yeah. We have a techniques class that uses, I think is still using cameras occasionally. Yep. We've used them for our summer field course. So it is definitely a really important tool.
And you don't have to be a hunter or anything.
No.
I mean,
this is just
really, and somebody asked me, what type would you recommend? And I said, you know, there's so many out there anymore. Are there specific things you want in characteristics of a camera that you'd like?
You know, there is the technology's evolved so far. I mean, I don't know that you can buy necessarily a bad camera.
No, I don't think so.
But it's just like a digital camera, a computer. I mean, the more money you spend, the more options you get. It's like buying a pair of binoculars. You get better quality optics, right? So you have to ask yourself, you know, how often are you going to use it? You have to at least be cognitive of, you know, is this in a safe place? Am I concerned about it being, you know, a theft? Am I concerned about bears destroying the camera? So, you know, how much do you want to put into it for what you get out of it?
Yeah, you can get cameras with $75 over $1,000 now. And I think because there's such a prolific tool these days that there's some great resources through Cabela's and some other places online that really they do a nice job of comparing all the different camera models and all the different attributes of each camera. So you get a pretty
good sense. There's a lot of literature out there. So we had done that too, kind of researching it and, you know, differences of opinion in terms of lighting that you use for night pictures and things like that. So there's a lot of great resources out there.
Jamie Nack and David Drake, our guests from the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And the UW Extension. Always great to have them with us here on the Ideas Network. I don't know if she has any trail cam set up, but one of the great wildlife photographers at Wisconsin Public Radio is Jill Nadeau, and she's joining me again with some hope. She's hoping that you will join me and so many other people who have already contributed and contribute now during our fall membership drive. If you're a sustainer, thanks very much. If it's a one-time pledge, thank you very much. WPR relies on listeners like you. Your support is the single largest piece of the budget. And if you haven't given yet, now is a great time to do it at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Absolutely. And last time we heard from 23 people. Thank you so much. Now, our goal this half hour is to get 25 pledges. So support the station you love and help us meet our goal when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's always fun talking with Jamie and David about wildlife issues and certainly Scott Craven as well. I think it's a good example of the fun and informative conversations we have on this show.
Absolutely. Now it's time for you to take a few minutes to make this hour and all those other hours that you listen to possible. And choose a gift amount that works for you. Make that pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Our budget comes from many sources. The single largest piece, though, is member support, including nearly 700 members of our 9XM Leadership Circle.
That's amazing. And the 9XM members support WPR with gifts of $1,200 or more every year. Now, that's just $100 a month. And for some people, that would be very doable. So join the 9XM Leadership Circle now. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
I'm Eve Robillard. I've been a sustaining member for a long, long, long time, at least 30 years. I grew up in Kewaunee, Wisconsin, and I can remember in 1955, I was in eighth grade, and there was a program from Wisconsin School of the Air that our teacher would nicely put on, and it was called Let's Write.
The recorded Wisconsin School of the Air feature Let's Write. Here's Marie Applegate.
Good morning, boys and girls. Today is Cat Day. Well, you might say today that cats are our purpose. You'll pardon the pun, won't you?
And I got to write a few poems or something. And I still do that once in a while today.
To make a difference in your community and beyond, visit WPR.org to get started now.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make that pledge Right now, during our fall membership drive, I'm Larry Mueller with Jill Nadeau asking for your support of WPR. And your gift, it's $10 or $15 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
And you know what, Larry? We're looking for 22 pledges again, just like last time. And I know that we
got three
do this.
This little period
yep,
here.
Yep. Yeah, we got three only, but we can do it. We can do it. We have a few more minutes. So make your gift to support the programs that you enjoy. And we know that you rely on us pretty much every day, I'll bet. So your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes a difference.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed and entertained every day. You enjoy the program, this program, I hope. And also, there's Chapter a Day. There's the Joy Cardine Show. There's Zorba Pastor on Your Health and many others you've come to rely on.
And WPR gives you a window on the world like no other place. So support the exciting mix of shows that you hear right here. You enjoy them. You know you do, so why don't you support by making a contribution? Remember, it's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We now have four members contributing to Wisconsin Woo-hoo. Public Radio, and they're all new members,
yeah,
which is really, really cool. If you've never given before, know that your new membership will help keep Wisconsin Public Radio strong, reliable. It's the station that you've come to depend on. And you decide the amount again. It's $5 or $10 a month, whatever. Then give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we're looking for 21 pledges. Just got a little bit of time to do it, about 5 minutes or so. But we know that you can do that. You can support us by calling us. Give your support to the station you love, your public radio.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed. It's I tell you what, I love working here, and I really love listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for me to learn and have a lot of fun along the way as well. And we've got some wonderful comments. Vanessa from Wausau says, I couldn't imagine a life without WPR. Thank you so much. Robin and Neil from Middleton say, thank you for keeping us informed. Jennifer from Oshkosh says, I've lived many places throughout the Midwest, and I've found WPR to be the best public radio station around. It's a real treasure due to the variety of programming and the issues it explores, from the international and national to the local and intensely personal. Isn't that a nice comment? What about
it
you?
Is.
If you feel even part of that, I hope you'll contribute now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
There's something more that you can do to help. Encourage a friend to join Wisconsin Public Radio if you are a sustainer. Sometimes all we need is just a little nudge from a friend to do the right thing.
You can help us grow our membership. You can motivate a friend to make a pledge right now. That would be wonderful. Tell them to go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And like you said, Larry, and I am a listener. I have been a listener for years and years, always appreciated what's done here. It's so important. So you are a listener. Help us provide some support here. Provide the single biggest piece of our budget at WPR. Make a pledge of $5 or $10 a month or any amount that's comfortable for you. And you'll be doing your part to keep this station strong. You can help. Just go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
21 more pledges to go, and we've got a couple of minutes to do that. Your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. It really helps.
Oh, you know, we haven't talked about those pint glasses yet, Larry. This is a set of 2 pint glasses for our drive this time, and they've got both the WPR and the NPR logos on them, and you will be proud to drink any beverage from them, even your beer, Larry. I'll be drinking milk out of mine, just so you know.
Well, I'm going to go with a beer, I think.
Okay.
It's a nice beer glass, to be perfectly honest. Somebody saw the one on my desk and said, "Oh, that's really cool." Well, you can be really cool too. Make your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We're going to have to go away here in just a few seconds. So if you haven't done it yet, it's still a minute or two to make that contribution. Your gift is very powerful. Makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.